Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
All righty, 9-11 now. We're going to talk about food allergies with Alice Hoyt, a board-certified food allergist. Holiday season fast approaching. You don't want to feed people the wrong thing. Morning, Alice Hoyt. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Thanks for having me back.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's start, I guess, with what's the difference between a food allergy and food intolerance, and how do you know if you have one?
That's a great question. A food allergy is when your immune system is attacking a food, as opposed to a food intolerance is really when the food is disagreeing with you because of some innate issue with the food, like or a lactose intolerance is a great example, too, where it's not an immune issue, but it's really that your body doesn't have enough lactase enzyme, an enzyme to help break down that sugar. Or you might be intolerant to caffeine, where the caffeine itself is just making you jittery. A food allergy is really your immune system has mounted an immune response against it, can cause severe anaphylaxis, life-threatening. Also, other types of food allergies can cause a lot of problems in your esophagus, can cause a lot of GI issues, multiple types of food allergy conditions. But ultimately, whether you have an allergy or an intolerance, if you're having an issue with food, you need to get it figured out. There are doctors to help you do that, but also so that you can enjoy the holiday season and not have an accidental ingestion. And then whether it's an allergy or an intolerance, have to deal with something you did not want to deal with at that holiday party.
What is somebody, I want to open the line, by the way, here at 504-260-1870. If y'all have any questions or comments about food intolerance or food allergies, Alice Hoyt is a board certified food allergist that can help you. What are some of the more common allergens that are out there?
The most common food allergens are peanut and tree nuts, and those are the ones that get a lot of glory, but also milk, wheat, soy, fish, shellfish, sesame. Egg is also a common allergy. So those are food allergens that are, they're called the top nine that are most common here in the U.S.
Somebody texted in about lactose intolerance. How do you know if you're allergic to milk or if you are just intolerant of, I guess, lactose, which is milk sugar? I don't want to hurt myself, doctor. I hope I'm saying the right thing.
So lactose intolerance is when your body in your intestine has not made enough lactase. It's an enzyme that breaks down the milk sugar lactose. And then what happens is because you're not breaking down that milk sugar travels along your intestine to places it really shouldn't be. And then that causes your large intestine to put a lot of water into your gut and can cause bloating, diarrhea, a lot of belly pain, a lot of discomfort. We really shouldn't poo-poo, no pun intended, lactose intolerance because it can really make people really miserable. If you're concerned you have a milk allergy, most times you're having things like hives, swelling. You can have trouble breathing, vomiting along with some of that GI discomfort. So if you're having anything beyond just GI symptoms, you're going to want to consider an allergy. But we absolutely see patients who have what's called eosinophilic esophagitis, which is kind of like eczema of the esophagus. But about half the time, especially in adults, milk is a trigger for that. They can have a lot of GI upset with that, especially reflux-like symptoms. And with EOE, you can actually get, really your esophagus starts to kind of tighten down and you can get food stuck when you're swallowing it. And Tommy, when I tell you, we are seeing so much more of that, it is unreal. So if anybody's listening and you feel like whenever you're swallowing like anything like a cheeseburger, steak, and it's just really hard to swallow, go see your local GI doctor, go see your local allergist and say, hey, you know, I heard this lady talking about EOE. Is this something that I could be having? Because you also don't want to be at that holiday party chowing down on that little, you know, tuna crudité or whatever, and then it gets stuck and you can't swallow it. So there's lots of different food allergies, lactose intolerance, all these different things. And also, we as docs, we're much more aware of these now. And so, you know, if you have talked to your doctor, you know, a few years ago about something, go back and give them another chance before you try to go to the internet and ask. You can get a lot of information from ChatGPT, but before you try to order tests or do something like that, go see an allergist and have a good conversation about things.
I was going to ask you to go back to EOE because I was reading a magazine the other day and I had to go back and reread. It's like, wait, what are we talking about here? And with radio, you can't do that. So go ahead and talk about EOE again, please, for people that didn't get it the first time.
Sure. EOE, short for eosinophilic esophagitis. Eosinophils are a type of allergy cell, and they should never be in your esophagus. Eosinophils can be in other parts of your body. They're a great type of white blood cell to help keep our bodies safe from certain types of infections, but they should not be in your esophagus. And when they are in your esophagus, they can cause inflammation that really should not be there. And I liken this to kind of the inflammation we can see on the skin when a kiddo or an adult has eczema. Lots of inflammation right there. And so what EOE is when there are eosinophils in your esophagus, it is causing that inflammation. So eosinophilic, the eosinophils are in your esophagus, esophagitis. Itis is inflammation of the esophagus. And over time, that can cause stricturing or that can cause the esophagus to really kind of tighten down, making it really difficult to swallow food easily. And this can also have symptoms of reflux, meaning like when you're eating and then food kind of like feels like it's kind of coming up. You can mm-hmm. have heartburn kind of symptoms, a lot of discomfort. And so if you're having those types of symptoms, see an allergist, see a GI doctor who is aware of EOE. Most of them are these days. And tell them very specifically about your symptoms.
Is this something you're born with or something you catch or something that invades your body?
That's a great question. It's sort of the new kid on the block when it comes to food allergies mm-hmm. and why it's kind of a food allergy thought of that in a lot of cases is because about half the time milk is a trigger of this, meaning if you stop drinking milk, if you start very strictly avoiding milk, this inflammation can resolve in some cases, but not all cases. So it is an acquired condition because you really, like I said, you should not have eosinophils in your esophagus. We do not know why babies, kiddos, and adults are developing it, but we are seeing it more and more.
Wow.
It is treatable. There are different treatments for it. Sometimes a reflux medicine can help. Sometimes a avoidance diet can help, like I mentioned about the milk, though we really try to limit avoidance diets because they can be really difficult. And especially when working with kiddos, it can really set up a bad relationship with food and also cause just a lot of stress in the family. You know, being a parent is challenging enough. Imagine telling your child they can't have ice cream or some of these other types of foods. Can also treat it with a little bit of a swallowed steroid to calm down the inflammation. And then there's also a biologic medication that can really prevent those eosinophils from wreaking havoc there.
I think I'm developing an ice cream addiction, but you don't deal with that, do you?
I think ice cream is very good for the soul, and I strongly encourage it. And if you do have a milk allergy or a lactose intolerance and you need a different type of ice cream, then something like a coconut milk ice cream can be very yummy.
No problem here. I'm doing fine with the regular ice cream. when you said it's happening more and more, does that include more foods or just more people with the same foods or more people with more foods?
Are you talking about specifically EOE or food allergies in general?
EOE.
EOE. So the jury's out on that. Those are really good questions that researchers are looking at to see, you know, is it more foods causing more problems? Is it mostly milk? Is it mostly egg and wheat?
Because you mentioned cheeseburger, which made me think of that. A lot of people eat cheeseburgers, and and the response would be what, doctor? Not to be graphic here or anything, but how would somebody know?
No, so if you have trouble swallowing a food, like say you feel like you always have to have some water or something to drink whenever you're eating to kind of help your food go down, then that could be a symptom that your esophagus is not, it has some inflammation, that your esophagus has some inflammation going on. And it can be foods, so foods that like steak, burgers, things that create kind of like a thick bolus in your mouth, those foods can be difficult to swallow, not because they themselves are allergenic. So it could be a hamburger, no cheese on it, no dairy, a dairy-free burger that you're just swallowing down. And because your esophagus has this inflammation, it's really narrowed. And so it's hard to swallow that burger, even though it doesn't have the allergen in it. It's in some cases, the allergenic exposure over time that has caused that inflammation, and that inflammation is then creating that physical issue of the food not being able to go down, whether it contains the allergen or not.
Somebody texted in and wants to know if the texture of the food has anything to do with that, or is an indication of EOE, and specifically they mentioned they eat a lot of chicken breast.
So the texture, what we find with chicken and those bulkier foods is that we find people start kind of selecting away. Sometimes they don't even realize they're doing it, but they'll start selecting away from those types of textures because they're difficult to swallow. And like especially when kiddos come into my office, if they're avoiding a lot of foods, even though they're only, let's say they have an anaphylactic peanut allergy, but their parents are saying, well, they really don't want to eat this or this or this or all these other foods that clearly have no peanut in them, then we really dive deep as to, you know, why are you feeling this way? What happens when you swallow? Does it feel good when you swallow? Does it feel bad when you swallow? We ask these questions that a lot of times people haven't been asked before, and we can get a lot of information about how the process of swallowing is feeling to that person, and that can give us a lot of information about what could be going on in that child or that adult.
Now, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Text line starting to fill up with questions. Somebody says they have a child. They want to know if they're truly allergic to the food or they just don't want to eat it. Somebody else wants to know if about nut allergies, what's different. I also want to talk to you about the new
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk.
Crazy weather we're having.
No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The thing with the peanut allergy study that came out. We're talking to Alice Hoyt, board certified. Board, I can't say it right. I will get it out, though. I'm combining Hoyt and Boyd. Alice Hoyt, board certified food allergist. We'll pick it up when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL 922. 928, talking to our friend Dr. Alice Hoyt, a board-certified food allergist. Doctor, did you say tuna crudite before?
I did, yes.
Funny, he's playing shortstop for the Dodgers when the World Series opens. I don't know if you knew that or not on Saturday night. All right, let's talk about this text that
Tommy, I don't follow as much sports as I did when I was in college.
Well, it was a stupid joke anyway. So you went to LSU? I didn't realize that.
Go Tigers.
Yeah, you got that right. I have a tree nut allergy, says this text, but I'm not allergic to peanuts, cashews, or almonds. How does that happen? And are there other nuts I might be able to try? Pecan, walnut, Brazil, and hazelnut are definitely out. I'm guessing because some are nuts and some aren't. Some might be legumes, but I'm, again, going to hurt myself. I'll turn it over to you.
So
Doc.
Good. No, you're hitting the nail on the head. So the concept that what the FDA defines as a tree nut, when you look like on the packaging of what a tree nut is, almond, pecan, walnut, cashew, those things, not all of those are actually tree nuts, and they do not all cross-react. You're exactly right. A peanut is a legume. Peanut does not cross-react with cashew. However, cashew and pistachio cross-react. Walnut and pecan cross-react. So in many cases, someone can absolutely be allergic to cashew and pistachio, but not allergic to walnuts, pecans, almonds, macadamia nuts, or peanuts. So it is really important if you do have a tree nut allergy and you've been told you have to avoid all tree nuts and maybe all peanuts, to get back plugged in with an allergist, because so much has changed over the last 5, 10, definitely 15 years regarding how we make diagnoses, how we do ingestion challenges to determine whether or not a food is safe for you or not safe, especially if we think, hey, the allergy is probably either resolved or it wasn't there, but they are allergic to these other things. We can do procedures in our office to clarify that so that you know what is safe for you or your child and what is not safe.
Tell me what's going on with these peanut allergies, because I'm confused.
Okay, so, and you're talking about with the babies, right?
Right. With the new study that's out with reversing peanut advice prevented tens of thousands of allergy cases?
Yes. So here's the deal, Tommy. In the 1990s, pediatricians, allergists recognized an uptick in peanut allergy, and we didn't know what was causing that, but we saw that, and in response, expert opinion was, well, let's have babies avoid peanuts and tree nuts, these commonly allergenic foods, until their immune system is ready for it. And so that resulted in delayed introduction of food, so babies weren't having anything with cow's milk until they were one, egg until they were two, peanuts, tree nuts, things like that, until they were sometimes 3 years old. And what happened was we had an even steeper rise in food allergy. And in 2008, those recommendations were kind of quietly walked back because they knew at that point, well, that didn't help. Around the same time, Gideon Lack in the UK was realizing that in Israel, these babies have food allergies, but they don't have a lot of peanut allergy. And, you know, he's like, well, what's up with this? And in Israel, there was this puff called Bamba. It's a peanut puff, and it's a puff that was a lot of babies' first food. They were just kind of like gnaw on it, kind of like a little like teething cracker. And so babies were eating peanut very early in Israel. They were having other food allergies, but not peanut. So he hypothesized that actually getting peanut in the diet early would prevent the development of food allergy. He conducted a beautiful study called the LEAP study, Learning Early About Peanuts. And those findings in 2015 very clearly demonstrated that in high-risk babies, meaning babies who were very likely to develop peanut allergy, they had eczema, they had an egg allergy, that those babies, if you got peanut into them early as 4 months of age with age-appropriate ways, so like diluting peanut butter or these little puffs, then those babies were actually significantly less likely to develop a peanut allergy. And it was a lasting effect. They did a second part to the study that demonstrated that These babies who were eating peanuts since they were 4 months old until they were 5 years old, they were eating a ton of peanut, not allergic. They had those babies then avoid it for a year, meaning not eat any peanut for a year, and then re-challenge them to peanut, had them come back in and eat peanut again, and they were still highly unlikely to have a peanut allergy. What that demonstrates is that early introduction, really early incorporation of peanut into the diet, this isn't just like a one and done, okay, I give my baby a little bit of peanut, now I'm done. No, this is becoming a part of their diet. They're eating it multiple times per week. That was a long-lasting effect, that was actually preventing the development of food allergy. Later in 2015, the Academic Allergy Societies got together and came out with a consensus statement saying, hey, we need to feed babies peanut-containing foods early, like 4 to 6 months of age. That's a big shift compared to what was going on, because I said in 2008, those recommendations that were expert opinion, not evidence-based, they were kind of really quietly just kind of like, okay, well, there's not good evidence for this, so we're not going to preach this anymore. But there was not a, hey, there's good evidence to get it in early, because that data hadn't been done yet, right? The study hadn't been done. So 2015, the study's published. Later 2015, consensus statement, we as allergists are like, woohoo, feed the babies these allergens early. And then in 2017, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the NIAID, the allergy part of the NIH, updated their guidelines and said, okay, we need to get the peanut in early and often. And this continued, and now we are singing this from the hilltops, and a lot of pediatricians are aware of this. I do some work with local pediatricians and pediatricians nationally, encouraging them to start doing this, because I'll tell you, Tommy, once a pediatrician, once an allergist, a doctor is taught something, and we are, you know, we learn that in training, and then we're doing that with patients, like, it's really difficult for us to make a shift away, especially if we're concerned that, oh, well, what if this baby eats this like little diluted peanut butter and then has a reaction? Well, I want to reassure the moms and dads out there that the earlier you get the allergens into the baby in an age appropriate terms, you're not giving them peanuts or choking hazards, but thinning peanut butter with breast milk or using different puffs products, different foods that are intentionally made for this purpose, this early introduction purpose, that it is very unlikely for your baby to develop peanut allergy, which is exactly what this study came out and showed, is that, wow, the peanut allergy rates and the food allergy rates in general decreased after these recommendations. So the sooner you do it, the lower the likelihood they're going to react. And in babies, especially young babies, the reactions we do see when we see them, and I'm not trying to minimize your baby having a reaction, because it is scary, even if it's just hives. If your baby is having hives after they eat a food and they're fussing or they vomit, like, it is scary to see your baby react like that. I am not trying to undermine that, but I am trying to encourage families that reactions in babies, it is very, very atypical, very rare for a baby to have like a very severe reaction. And if you wait till they're 2, 3, the older you get, that's, their reactions can become severe. Absolutely. Anaphylactic food allergy takes lives every year. It's heartbreaking. And one of the reasons it's so heartbreaking is because in a way it can be prevented. And that's what this study was showing, which is wonderful. We need to feed, we have way over medicalized how we feed babies.
Well, let me take a break, Doc, because somebody texted in. No, that's all right. Somebody texted in along the lines of what you're saying. They say they have a newborn at home and they don't know. They don't want to cause any kind of shock, anaphylactic shock or anything like that, if that's what it's called. But they also want to make sure that they expose the kid to as many different foods as they can. So you can walk us through that when we come back. We're talking to Dr. Alice Hoyt, board-certified food allergist. You can text your questions into 504-260-1870. And I'll pass them along. We come back 9:37, 23 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Dr. Alice Hoyt, board-certified food allergist. Joining us live from Metairie Road. Is that where you are, Doc?
Yes, sir.
Tell me about the clinic, and if people are concerned about, and we'll get to the question I had about the kids and exposing to different foods, et cetera, in a second, but if somebody wants to find out more, how do they do it?
Absolutely. Check out HoytAllergy.com. They can learn all about our practice, our amazing team, and give us a call.
What everybody's got a story, and I just got to ask you, what made you want to get into this line of work?
That's a great question. You know, hindsight's 20/20, and God knows what he is doing.
I think
spent a lot
does.
Of time on my grandparents' farm.
Somebody does.
With, he totally does. It's really amazing. Long story short, I've always been interested in the way food and our bodies interact. My husband actually has a peanut allergy, and my sweet little boy has egg F-pies, which is a non-anaphylactic type of food allergy, and he's doing awesome now. He's on his way to outgrowing it. But, you know, I started working with these families, and before I came back to New Orleans, I was at Cleveland Clinic and had the opportunity to help set up their Food Allergy Center of Excellence up there with an amazing team, and started offering just the most advanced treatments for food allergies. And when my family and I were moving back home, my husband's also a physician, and we were moving back here, I was like, I need to keep offering and keep doing what I'm doing. So I hung my own shingle, as they say.
There you go. So somebody wanted to know about introducing kids to foods or knowing what they're allergic to, and you don't want them to go into shock when you realize that's what they're allergic to. How do you determine that, Doc? Can you pretest, or what do you do?
Well, so you don't really need to pretest, especially in young babies, because like I talked about earlier, it's really, really, really atypical, really unlikely for a baby to go into anaphylactic shock. Their immune system really just isn't quite mature enough to really, in most cases, do that. The most common reactions we see are skin reactions. And look, it can be scary to see your baby have hives and swelling, but I want those families to rest assured it is highly unlikely to have severe anaphylaxis in a baby. And so to introduce these, and that's also what we're seeing in this study, right, is that the earlier you introduce foods, the less likely it is to have an allergy, meaning the less likely it is to have a reaction too, right? So how you want to introduce a food is, you know, look at what your family is eating. And the concept that baby food has to come from a jar or from a pouch is just it's so wrong, Tommy. It's so wrong. It's so first world and so wrong. One of the best ways to feed your baby is to, first of all, make sure that your baby is ready for food. So around 3, 4, 5 months of age, that's when baby is sitting up, has head control, starts looking at you when you're eating that cheeseburger saying, hey, mom, when are you going to give me some of that cheeseburger? And you can, as long as the cheeseburger is well done, right? No undercooked meat for our little ones, and no honey because of the risk of botulism, and clearly no alcohol. But otherwise, you could take a little bit of that cheeseburger, chew it up, make sure it's like a nice soft texture for the baby, that they're ready for that kind of texture. If they're not quite ready for that, you can do some purees. And when you're doing this, you want to get things like peanut butter, mixed peanut butter with breast milk, with water, with a little bit of applesauce to make it a texture that they are ready for developmentally. Scrambled eggs are sometimes one of the first foods that a lot of babies will try, right? Because you can make scrambled eggs in a way that they're really tiny, and then, you know, cute little baby sitting in a little high chair and trying to pick up the little bits of scrambled egg, things like this. And so we have done a disservice as healthcare providers when we're trying to over-medicalize this. Really, our baby should be pretty much eating what we're eating. And it also, Tommy, it really makes you look at what you're eating. Because if you're like, wow, I don't really want to feed this to my baby, like, should we really be eating it? So, you know, colorful foods, fruits, veggies, if you're in, really just very soft. And these are things that when I teach pediatricians about this, I teach pediatricians to talk about how they are going to teach their patients how to feed babies, starting at the pediatric prenatal visit. A lot of moms may not know, but when you're pregnant, you can actually go have an appointment with your pediatrician to get to know the pediatrician and get some anticipatory guidance on, okay, what should I expect? And I am counseling pediatricians to talk to those moms then about what to expect with feeding babies. At the newborn visit, you're just trying to help that mom make sure that she's doing okay and that baby's doing well, nursing or bottle feeding, whatever is going well. And then you're revisiting, those pediatricians are revisiting, or should be, food introduction at 2 months, Because between that 2 and 4 month appointment, a lot of times babies are starting to look and be like, hey, I kind of want to try something. There are other studies where foods are introduced at 3 months of age. You know, it really depends on the child. And so if we as pediatricians are waiting until 6 months to have a conversation about food, a lot of times the horse is out of the barn.
You mentioned colors of food. Somebody texted in and said they have a 3- and 5-year-old, and every time they try to give them something green, it comes right back at them. So they don't know if it's allergies or if it's one mimicking the other or they just don't like the color. What would your advice be there, Doc?
Well, is it coming back in the form of they are declining it? They have a selective palate. That's my euphemism for picky eater. Or is it really sometimes the greener foods, they can be a little more bitter. Sometimes the tummy doesn't quite like them. So it really depends on how it's coming back at them.
Just going by what the text said, Doc, I don't know. I don't know if it's exorcist stuff. I don't know what we're talking about here.
A lot of times, though, it's not just one color is going to be an allergen, but a lot of times the greener foods kiddos don't care for them because they're bitter. So those can be times when you can try to mix it with something else, and actually like apple and spinach in like a little smoothie or something could be a nice alternative if you're trying to get some of those healthy greens in.
What about deep fried and covered with powdered sugar? Just an idea.
You know, I mean, moderation, Tommy.
Yeah, that's probably why I had the problems I had. Real quick, before we let you go, somebody wants to know about treatment for EOE.
Yeah, so EOE treatments, like I mentioned earlier, there are four right now. You can either try to calm the inflammation with a swallowed steroid that coats the esophagus. You can try a proton pump inhibitor, like a Nexium kind of medicine, to calm the inflammation that way. There is also diet avoidance. So about half the time in our adult patients, if they avoid milk, then that can actually improve the EOE. And then there's also what a lot of patients are going for now, a biologic called Dupixent or Dupilumab, which actually prevents those eosinophils from hanging out in the esophagus. So there are more treatments now for all of the food allergies than ever before. So if you haven't talked to your doctor or seen an allergist in the last few years, I would strongly encourage you to do so because it's a whole new world.
I know someone's about 50 years old, got a shellfish allergy. Will that ever go away or not?
You know, I mean, that's one that comes on oftentimes later in life and typically hangs out. And we really don't know why it comes on later in life other than historically shellfish is a seasonal thing. You know, the last few decades with so much access to all these different foods in first world countries, we don't have so much seasons of foods anymore, right? There are some therapies for shellfish allergy, some immunotherapies, but in most cases, most people just avoid it. And carry Epi, please. If you have an anaphylactic food allergy and you're listening, or if you eat a food and you've gotten hives from it, please carry an epinephrine auto-injector. The epinephrine is helping your body combat all of the symptoms of anaphylaxis. Antihistamines won't do that.
Thank you, Doc. Very valuable information. A pleasure as always. Very interesting hour. Dr. Alice Hoyt, board-certified food allergist. Go to Hoyt Allergy, and you can find out more. We'll take a break. Noel's got a big debate coming up. We'll talk about it when we return on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
T-Mobile is more than the best network in the game. They're now the best network in America, according to the experts at Ookla Speedtest. So baseball fans are connected to the Fall Classic from home to home plate with the most advanced 5G, more towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever before. T-Mobile has you covered. For baseball fans, it's better over here.
Best mobile network based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data, first half 2025. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.